This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey you, yeah you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Yes, you are listening to Saturday Magazine from Joy 94.9, Australia's only LGBTI Q plus community-owned radio station, okay?
Joy Radio Media.
There we go. There we go. Our next right guest, here from the Victorian Pride Centre.
Yes, our next guest is Professor Catherine Bennett, Chair in Epidemiology at Deakin University. One of our, you are our favourite well, we don't have a great group of epidemiologists, but you're our favourite. We love talking to you about this stuff because you know what it's about.
Well, Mac, I used to work with an epidemiologist.
Did you?
Yeah, Nick Crofts. You must know Nick Crofts.
She goes.
Don't know where he is these days. I haven't seen him for a long time.
Why do I know that name?
He was working in the HIV space.
Is he a good look?
Macca, it's not about looks.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Catherine, let's be professional now. I wanted to there's a lot of talk about living with COVID. Now I get offended by this because what it actually means is, and I know some listeners will be offended by this, it actually means dying from COVID. Not living with COVID. The subscript is living with COVID means people are going to die from COVID and probably more of them. Am I wrong?
Yeah, look, I think actually the message is living with SARS-CoV-2, the virus, and because we've got the vaccine rolling out, the idea is we can live with the virus safely because the amount of COVID, the disease, is really reduced, and therefore the risk of, you know, having serious illness and possibly dying is also really reduced by a lot if you're vaccinated. So we will see some deaths in the community, you're right, but I think the focus is now on saying, well, we're seeing deaths even when we're trying to contain the case numbers really low. The more people vaccinated, we will see less deaths than we're probably seeing in Sydney now, but you know, we'll be able to cope with the virus in the community and not have to close down every time we find one case.
Look, I you know, that's because it is this narrative of living with COVID, you know, the 70%, the 80%. I'm quite troubled by some of the discussion, the report that the Doherty Institute have done, which, correct me if I'm wrong, originally was based on the 70 and 80% opening, was based on around 30 cases, 30 new infections a day. I'm told, or we're told, that if it's actually hundreds and hundreds of cases, the model is still good. We can still open. I don't understand that. As an epidemiologist, can you tell me
how that works?
How these stats actually don't matter?
Well, it's all about how the models work. So what they do is they basically simulate what would happen in the real world statistically. And you do that by starting an outbreak, and then you see what levels of control you have for that outbreak given vaccination levels in the community as one of our, in future, you know, the most important things we can do to control the virus spread, as well as looking at other public health interventions, which Australia will keep using, just as we do with other infectious diseases. And so that's what they put into the model. You start it with 30 cases because that's how many cases you need to seed into the model for it to start to actually run. If you put in less cases, there's a very good chance that they don't pass it on and it dies out. So in real life and in statistics, you then say, well, the best way to start this is if assume you've got 30 cases. So they were just tasked with saying, if we don't have virus in the community as we are now, well, how can we manage the virus and what levels of control do we have? So in their models, they're actually running once the virus starts to spread in the community, when they didn't have many controls in place, they could see, you know, what happens when you get 1,000 cases or 2,000, and they looked at that over initially a six-month period. So it just told them how much control you have, and then you can look at the risks of those breakthrough infections where people might still get seriously ill, or the risk of someone unvaccinated being infected, and that's what they look at to assess how our hospitals would be able to cope, and to make sure that's all within the kinds of constraints that our hospital system is able to cope with. So it's when it changes, what actually changes if you have more cases in the system is you can't do your test, trace and isolate. And I know you've been talking about contact tracing today. It's harder to have those long conversations with so many people. So that's what actually changes as your case numbers go up. The model's still working because it's telling you who's less likely to get infected, who's more likely and so on. But if your contact tracing isn't quite as strong, then that doesn't kick in as much to that level of control. So that's why the aim is to bring the case numbers down in the outbreaks we currently have as part of the transition, rather than saying we have to get to zero, because you don't. But equally, you want to see how the vaccination in the community works to bring those case numbers down, and then to start this transition period with more manageable case numbers.
So what you're saying, Catherine, is that living with COVID means that people will continue to get infected, will continue to get sick, and perhaps some will even die. Perhaps is that a reasonable summary?
So like our other infectious diseases, that's right. Yeah. So we have the virus in the community. Less people get sick because most people will be vaccinated, but you still will see some virus causing infections and causing illness, and we will see the occasional deaths as well. That's as true as it is with influenza and other things. Mm. So it's about, managing the disease as we do our other infectious diseases.
There's an interesting report in the Age today, actually. It's called Living with COVID, a global Snapshot, and it actually looks at the experience of different countries around the world. Israel, for example, which has 63% of the population vaccinated, now has a daily 7-day average of new cases in the 900s. And they still have a range of restrictions in place. So they haven't basically just said, go for it. There are still restrictions on the number of people that can go to museums and cafes and pools and cinemas and all sorts of other things, including indoor spaces. So what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, that's just one example, of course, because this particular article also showcases what's happening in France and Canada and Britain and Sweden and also Singapore. But what I'm seeing is that, in fact, vaccination is a tool. It is not the answer. It needs to work in conjunction with other restrictions, probably masking and physical distancing from here on. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, that's certainly what the Australia plan says. It's about, I think our chief medical officer said, a soft landing, you know, not coming out of all the work we've done to keep the virus in check in the community and manage that risk of serious illness in particular. But it's about transitioning, where the vaccination levels in our community help control the virus, and so that it takes pressure off all the extreme interventions we've done, like, you know, lockdowns and so on. And the modelling suggests that once you get into this next period with our vaccination rates very high, that you can then use your test, trace and isolate, and probably look a bit different to now. You're probably not necessarily chasing every case, but focusing where you're seeing hotspots, where you might have parts of the community where our vaccination levels aren't as high. You know, it'll be much more focused, not this more blanket approach that we've had to date.
Yes.
When you look at overseas, Israel did actually open up. They didn't even have personal distancing for a while there, when they were really enjoying the benefits after their first full round of vaccinations were completed early, and then went into, you know, their summer and had a good run. It's when they started to see the cases come up that they stepped back into some restrictions. Of course, we've seen the UK have their Freedom Day and really step away. We saw the same in the Netherlands, actually. They got their vaccination rates up quite high. They opened up, they ran summer festivals. They're still doing a bit of testing, but it got away from them. But they had, you know, quite widespread virus in the community too. Our aim is not to, you know, as best we can, make sure it doesn't just take off, that you're actually handing over the controls to vaccine rather than just saying, we trust vaccine now, we'll let it rip. We're actually going to be moderating it as we go ahead. And of course, you know, the current outbreaks have changed the way we move into that transition, but it makes it even more important, you know, the vaccination levels rise to help control the outbreaks and then really focus on that transition.
Do you think, Catherine, Australians have a different view about the level of transmission, the level of hospitalisation and the level of death they will accept to the rest of the world? I think we do.
Look, I think that's, yeah, well, I think that's absolutely right, Macca. And I think it's a really, it's a strange question to ask, you know, when people were saying how many deaths will we, is okay. And the other, of course, is when will we be ready to open up, you know. But in reality, we've actually, our situation shifting, and it's not true for the whole country, certainly true for New South Wales, but now it's basically saying, how do we bring this under control? How do we keep deaths to a minimum? Because we're seeing deaths and we're hearing deaths reported every day. How do we get this down by using vaccination to better manage the disease in the community? That's what we normally do, and that's what other countries have had to do because they've had the big waves. And unfortunately, we're not even talking about when we let the virus in. We've got virus in the community, Delta, couldn't be held at the border, and now we are in a situation where it's about control. It's not about, are we ready to open up?
Catherine,
it's actually about managing this and then moving through this to the transition.
Catherine, a lot's been said about the magic numbers, 70% and 80%. Can you explain to us and to our listeners this morning what those numbers mean? And what are we talking about? When we say 70%, what's the denominator? Is that everybody in Australia, every single...
Good question, Tess.
Go on.
No, it's actually those who were originally in the eligible group, so everyone who's 16 and older. And so 80% corresponds to about 65% or 60, somewhere between 63 and 65%, depending on how you count it. So it's about similar to where Israel got to with their rollout. And, of course, if we start adding in other age groups, then that's on top of that. And, of course, the 80% also isn't, you know, the ceiling. That's actually saying when we get to that level, that's when you should have... you know, pretty good control community-wide, but it assumes a couple of things. One is that we don't end up with pockets of community where the rates are actually much lower than that because they are still more vulnerable to having these local outbreaks that could see, you know, more difficult to contain outbreaks, and then you might see a local problem with more serious illness. But also, you know, the assumption is that people will keep vaccinating, and Australia does have very good vaccination uptake normally, and in fact, the government's been monitoring sentiment in the community, and it was at its highest in February this year when everyone could see the vaccines coming and it was all starting to lay out, and 80% of people said they were either already vaccinated or intending to. And it dropped, not surprisingly, after the confusion then over ages and preferences and these rare side effects and so on. But now it's back up to 79%.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's great, but we still got to see how it maps out over Australia and make sure some areas aren't, you know, kind of left out of this conversation and might not be thinking it's that relevant to them, and in fact could end up quite vulnerable if there is a bit of virus now going to be potentially in the community.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Catherine, we're out of time again. Thank you for making time to speak to us. It's always a pleasure. We look forward to the time when we can have you in the studio, and I reckon we might have a bit of a lunch afterwards. That'd be nice.
It certainly would.
Wouldn't that be nice? And then we can be talking about how we've hit those targets and where we're
going.
That's
right.
Yes.
That's right. Thank you so much, Catherine Bennett, Professor Catherine Bennett, Head of Epidemiology at Monash University.
No, Deakin University.
Oh, Deakin. Mate. Oh, God. You won't be at Monash, no.
You got the wrong franchise there.
Oh, yeah, I know. Sorry, Catherine.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.